Thank you for the introduction. So today I'm going to be talking about a program that was started about 4 years ago, and it's called Ironwell Kids and Power Up. And we're going to be going through a little bit of some of the research that we have right now. And this is, we have presented and we have a publication actually in the works, but this is a little bit different. What we did in this study was we're actually looking at feasibility in a very low income area with highly diverse students population. So I think being here, we all know that there is this, that if you're healthy, then you have better educational outcomes, and if you have higher academic outcomes, then you're more likely to be healthy. And poverty does play a role in both of these areas. So we just need to really realize, and I think it's coming, especially with all this research in the last 10 years, that healthier students are better learners. And Chuck Bash, out of Teachers College, put a big, had an entire journal article in the School Health in 2011 that really highlighted the causal effect of these. So just the relationship, let me pull this over. So children who do not consume breakfast are less focused and have poorer cognitive functioning, and we learned a lot about breakfast. I think many of these presentations we've seen throughout the week have really focused on breakfast, and we know that many students skip breakfast. If you look at the NHANES data, it's about 15 to 20% of students skip breakfast, and if you look at the YRBS of high school students, if you look at that, it's that they say only 40% of high school students have actually had breakfast in the last 7 days. So skipping breakfast is something that, especially with now there's a big push to extend the school day so that they can have breakfast and then they can actually have more sleep. And children who are overweight are more likely to experience peer victimization and are less engaged in the school environment. And we know that urban low-income minorities have lower academic test scores, feel less connected to their school environment, and experience lower rates of high school graduation. The school connectedness and engagement, this is actually an area that people are really looking into now. And the reason is that academic achievement is such a long-term goal, and we're not really seeing a lot of change. And especially in a lot of these states where you look at the proficiency level and it's on a scale of 1 to 4, we're not going to see a lot of change. So what we're seeing now and what we're focusing in is on this school engagement. The neighborhood income effect, we know, this once again has been a lot of presentations on this, but we know that areas of low income are more likely to have poor access of healthy food, are likely to have higher food prices, less access to student supermarkets, and have much more fast food and convenience stores. And the reason why the fast food convenience stores are so important to look at is that there has been a significant correlation between fast food outlets, the number of fast food outlets, and the rate of obesity and diabetes. So the program that we're going to talk about today is a multi-component approach, and it has a student and a parent educational efforts. And part of the student education efforts is that they come up with a policy change at the end of the curriculum where they really try to look at the environment. So this program has been implemented in 6 states and with about 4,000 students. And some of the students have been really innovative, and they've sent letters to convenience stores, and they said, we want to reduce the number of advertisements that we go in when we go into the convenience stores that are very close to the schools, and we also want to increase access to foods. So they have said, in New York City, we have partnered with City Harvest, and we go around, and we have actually put refrigerators in bodegas, and we have a fresh food market. And then the children write the letters and say they will actually purchase these foods. Because you can put the food in there, but if no one's going to purchase, in a month, they'll be gone. The whole refrigerator will not be stocked with healthy food. It will be stocked with unhealthy foods. Just in the presentation in this room prior, it was all about how advertising is just huge on fast food and unhealthy foods. It's $4.6 billion, and about over a third of that, $1.7 billion, is advertised to children. And way down there, you see the $116 million are spent on fruits and vegetables. So a big component of this curriculum is advertisement and looking at advertisement and how can we change how can we actually change that and get them aware that they're getting all this advertisement for unhealthy foods sent to them constantly. So this is the program. It's targeting middle school students. And the really innovative thing about this is it was created by Hollywood writers and producers, and these are Hollywood writers that wrote specifically for children's programs, such as Saved by the Bell. And the producers are documentary producers, and then there are also fields of experts in the field of medicine, pediatricians, consulted people in the health field, nutrition, and even in the English department. So us at Teachers College, we were consulted upon, and we had an English department professor who did this, because we really want to, all of these programs that are health and nutrition, we want to integrate them, because they can't be these standalone programs that don't correlate or don't have any academic role. So we really want to, as the last presenter talked about, we really want to make sure that they're aligned with these Common Core standards. And then once again, you have to make sure that it's interactive and that you promote the skills. So the theoretical framework is we did social cognitive learning theory, where we really focused on the modeling of behaviors, and the theory of planned behavior, where students have to understand that they have control over their own behavior and that they have the confidence to be able to perform that behavior. So part of this program was that you had these three characters, and these are all actors from Hollywood, and they actually come up and they introduce the program. They're on a video. They introduce the program and say, and they teach the students the first class, and then after that, at the end of that video, they come and they say, now we're leaving. We have to spread the word throughout the rest of the country, and so you have to take over. So the students themselves have to take over, and what they do is that each session, they have these three students who have a scripted play, and the scripted play comes from Hollywood. When I was looking at this, I was like, oh, I didn't even realize some of how actors actually have their certain, they have their roles, and then they actually have, everything is highlighted differently. So it's set up just like you would be a Hollywood actor in a classroom. And then they have these acting tips, and this all came from actors, and here's one at the bottom, and she says, stand straight and project your voice. Be sure everyone in the back row can hear you. And that's just one of the actors' acting tips, so they have multiple acting tips. And what we found is that students really like that peer connection, so they're learning from their peers, they're getting the knowledge from the peer instead of the teacher. And why is this so important? Well, teachers, a lot of them don't know how to teach nutrition, they don't know how to teach health, they stand up there and they lecture, and a lot of that information is not accurate. I actually sat and I've done many observations, and one, this is just anecdotal, we sat in a classroom and we had a teacher's talk about, oh, you shouldn't be having white bleach flour, and the reason why is because they actually bleach the flour. And I was like, oh my God, this is not possible. Like, I can't believe I'm hearing this. But these are things that we've heard over and over again in the nutrition field when we were doing observations. So we said, okay, let's take the teacher out of this, and let's actually have all the information coming from kids in a play, in a drama, where you're integrating English language arts, and especially important for students who are English language learners. And the reason is that they may not be able to pronounce everything, so we teach them that they should practice. All Hollywood actors practice, and you practice and practice until you can get that pronunciation correct, until you can understand the words. So these students, when they come up to class, a lot of them are very nervous, but they've practiced, and hopefully they are able to project the information. So some of the program components, I know you can't read this, but there's just 10 different lessons, and the whole gist of it is that we want students to critically analyze what's in their food and where does it come from. If they can just answer those two questions, we have done a really good thing. So it comes with student workbooks, teacher guides, and they do have teacher training. It's comprehensive teacher training because a lot of the activities obviously have to come from the teachers, and the teachers guide them. And they have the food and garden material, and that all comes to the teacher. Even the blenders come to the teacher, so they don't have to do anything. We don't provide like knives and things like that because this is a big problem. Yeah, a big problem in schools. It was even getting a blender. You have no idea how many schools were like, oh, we can't have the blender. It could be used as a weapon. And we're like, okay. I don't think we're going to, yeah, we're like, we're not going to have kids stick their hand in the blender. Like, but they now have to sign this comprehensive thing that says that they will not sue us if they do have a student stick their finger in the blender. Huh, but... So here's the garden labs, and every single week we have scientific observations of the garden lab. And we've actually implemented this program out in California where they really do have nice, beautiful outdoor gardens, and they're able to plant the seeds and do this work outside, which is wonderful. But in many instances, we have the kids just planting the little peas. Peas are great because they grow very fast in pots. And we have herbs, because herbs are wonderful, because kids can actually eat the herbs, and they grow fast. Then you can realize, hey, herbs are vegetables, and that you can actually, you know, eat the things that you've grown. And a lot of these urban kids have never seen things grow. The food labs, we have two of them. One is about that breakfast bar, so big push on breakfast, and they make this breakfast bar with no cooking, and it's very simple, and it's all nut-free. No allergy. We try to prevent all the allergies. And the Berry Blast smoothie, they actually, I know you can't see it, but there's chopped spinach in there. And the reason why they have the chopped spinach is because we want to show that smoothies should always incorporate vegetables as well. Part of this activity at the end is that students have to go out and then they have to create their own smoothie. And one of the requirements is you have to put a vegetable in it. Kids come up with amazing things, like they put carrots and celeries, and spinach is very easy because you can't taste the spinach, but some of the smoothies that kids come up with are amazing, and they look like they could be terrible, but they actually taste really good, and then they have to name them, and then you put a recipe book together for the students. So this is a way of incorporating parent education as well, because they have to go back and talk to their parents and have their parents help them with their smoothies. Skills-based, so you have a lot of refusal decision-making skills, and we do a lot of that persuasive argument. So we do have, the way to refuse is very difficult for some students, especially some of these some of the scenarios is that they have to go, let's say, to a friend's house, and a friend's parent is providing food that is unhealthy. What do you say? It's very difficult. I mean, these are situations that kids... and that we all come upon. And unless you have that confidence to be able to explain to them or have an excuse or actually have some kind of alternative, it's difficult for students. But then they practice in the classroom. So there is also a huge push on advertisements. So this is all about media analysis. So what do you think is in your burger, fries, burger, soda, and what really is in your burger? And they talk about how the fries are made with oil and the massive amount of sugar that are in soda. And then this is similar to that truth campaign on smoking, is like, are you being fooled by food advertisements? Shame on you. I mean, we're going to see more and more about this because we know it's effective, these campaigns on smoking cessation, so we're also thinking that it's going to be effective in food advertisements. And then this is all throughout the schools where they have advertisements for healthy students, for healthy foods. So in this is a feasibility study we did, and it's we implemented it in College Crusade of Rhode Island. It's the most College Crusade only has students come after school, and they're highly economically disadvantaged. 92% of them are from minority families. 46% live in homes where English is not the primary language. And of this group, almost 60% of them do not graduate high school. So this is one of the most highest risk in the entire country. And the College Crusades has a large grant where they allow students to come after school and they implement academic programs. And we put this in because we know that this is academic as well as health. So we just did a simple pre-test, post-test design. We used the food behavioral checklist and the fruit and vegetable self-efficacy scale. and then we analyzed the data. We had just 54 pre-test and 46 post-test. Majority were women or girls, and 70% were girls, and ethnicity mirrors the population, which is highly diverse. So these are the students, and they grew their herbs, and they really worked on the scripts with their English. Results, differences between natural and processed foods, and these were all the questions like, is an apple a natural food? And there were students who didn't even realize that an apple is a natural food, so it was nice to be able to educate them. This may not work in a highly educated area where everybody knows that an apple is not processed, but here it did. The importance of eating breakfast. A lot of students actually thought that there was this importance, but at the end, almost 100% agreed that there were strongly agreed that eating breakfast was important. So did they have the confidence in consuming vegetables? And this is a scale that has multiple questions in it, and it's all about are you able to ask your parents for vegetables? Do you feel confident eating the vegetables that are served at lunch? Positive outcomes for consuming fruits and vegetables. So these were some of the questions that were asked about, if you eat more fruits and vegetables, will you be healthier? Will you think clearly? Will you be strong? There's a 7-item scale on that. And then this, after the program, the student program, and we have the results, we actually implemented the parent wellness workshop because we really wanted to educate the parents as well, and this comes with the program. So just in conclusion, the nutrition program can be implemented successfully in an after-school classroom setting with disadvantaged youth. You have to include interactive activities, including the drama and hands-on. And the reason why it's so important, especially in after-school, is because we all know that students, once they're out of school, they really do need that. They are tired of sitting all day, and they really need to be getting up and doing things. And what we're finding now is that we all know that after-school programs are being pushed by the federal government. We have a lot more extended learning time grants out there and 21st century grants. And I think we can implement health and nutrition programs into these after-school programs that can help with academic achievement. And we saw increases in knowledge, self-efficacy, outcome expectations, and we do need to use a multi-component approach. Just the next steps, we have a randomized control study going on right now in the Bronx in Manhattan, and we are looking at education academic outcomes, but we're really looking at that student engagement and whether or not this program can improve student engagement in 3 different areas, on the behavioral, on the cognitive, and the emotional. And this is where the field is going to push for student engagement. So that study should be done. It will be concluded. It's a waitlist control group study, but at the end, we're actually going to survey the students as well, so we can have a replication there. And then this is the website for the Iron Well Kids. So thank you. All set, right?